it's Steve and Dave again. We are two guys in a river. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
No doubt we all want to catch more fish. I want to, and Dave needs to.
Ooh, that hurts.
But we're all about fly fishing and our love for the outdoors, so let's get after it. I have a love-hate relationship with spring creeks. Man, I love them for their clarity, for their purity, for their beauty. But I gotta tell you, Dave, sometimes I hate them because they're the big leagues of fly fishing.
That is a great way to say it. It really, they are the big leagues. They're the major leagues.
Oh, yeah, they are. I mean, when I moved from the Yellowstone River, say in Montana's Paradise Valley, to Nelson Spring Creek, and I fished both a lot.
And that's also
when I lived there.
In Paradise Valley.
Right. Yeah. In fact, it runs into the Yellowstone River. But when I moved from the Yellowstone to Nelson Spring Creek, I mean, I feel like the baseball player who hits home runs in AAA and then gets moved up to the majors and everybody's all excited and then he sets a new record for strikeouts. Oh, man.
Well, I just remember when I moved here from the West, I moved to Chicago in 1991. And I was just perplexed when I started fishing the driftless region. Absolutely perplexed.
Oh, man, I know it. Well, Dave, you and I are no experts, but hey, we have gotten better at fly fishing spring creeks over the years. At least you have. Sometimes I wonder about myself.
That's not true, Steve. I swear that when we go out, you catch three, I catch three.
Oh, no. It's,
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
You catch four, I catch three.
No, I was going to say it's the other way around. You catch five, I catch three. But anyway.
I don't think that's true. We're pretty much even.
You know, I like this line of argumentation because when we were younger, we argued, you know, it would be like, I would say, no, I caught five, you catch three. And now I'm flipping it around. So we have matured.
So we should remind our listeners, if they don't remember this, remember years ago we were in Montana and there was a pronghorn on the side of the road, like an antelope.
Right. Yeah.
And if you know anything about pronghorns, so they have horns, or are they?
Yeah, horns? They're actually horns, not antlers. Yeah,
not antlers, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a really, really big pronghorn is what, 14, 15 inches high?
Yeah, 15, 16.
I mean, that's huge, right?
Yeah, it is.
So here Steve and I are driving along the road. We only get one glance at this. Yeah. And I say something like, you know, that looked like about 15 inches. And then Steve goes, no, oh, that was probably only 12 or 13.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how we used to argue.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, we were both certain we were right. Oh, man. Yeah, we were probably both wrong.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. But anyway, to my point, yeah, I think we have learned some things about fly fishing spring creek. So, yeah, let's talk about that today. How about that?
Well, they are different. So why don't we begin with some insights, Steve? Why don't you just define a spring creek for us, right?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. I mean, a spring creek is a stream or a creek whose source is some kind of an underground spring or springs, you know, different than a freestone river. So it doesn't rely on rain or snow. I guess you could say it's self-sufficient. And in a lot of cases, it's not affected by snow runoff. I mean, that's why in Montana, when, you know, the Yellowstone is blown out, you know, because all the snow runoff, the Spring Creek still fish well. Of course, they had that issue a couple years ago where, they almost lost Nelson's. And I know, you know, one of the ranchers who was up there with his tractor front end loader, and they're, you know, they were able to kind of shore up the, well, I guess you'd call it the dike or whatever, kind of, it's like a retaining wall that protected it. But yeah, in a normal year, I mean, you've got snow runoff in the big rivers, but those creeks, that just doesn't happen. Now, that's not the case though in the driftless, right?
No, the driftless doesn't have that kind of runoff. And there's not these huge rivers. Now, the Root River is bigger.
Yeah.
And
but they do blow. I mean, they do, well, not blow out, but they do get kind of chocolatey sometimes.
Absolutely, they do, yeah.
Seems like it's just that ground runoff. You know, all those farm pastures and there's snow. And yeah, a few years ago in the Driftless, remember, there was just a ton of rain, and so those things just filled up, and there was some flooding. But
wasn't that in like Bohemian Valley there? There was
near Timber Cooley, Valley, right off of Timber Cooley, that happened.
So it's not that it doesn't happen; it's just that it's so different. Back to Nelson Spring Creek, and you were talking about the guy with the tractor. What was he trying to repair? What was almost lost?
Well, yeah, the river, see, the creek, Nelson Spring Creek, runs right along the river before it empties into it.
The Yellowstone River.
The Yellowstone. And the Yellowstone had flooded so much that it was pushing up against the bank that separated the river from the creek. I mean, that may not be, maybe that's the easiest way to think of it. I'd have to go back and look at it, but I just remember then the river runs pretty close. So anyway, the ground between the creek and the river was about, you know, ready to wash out. So they kept just shoring that up so it wouldn't, and they were able to save it. But yeah, I mean, a spring creek, bottom line is its source of springs, you know, underground spring or springs, and that's that. And
well, what this means, I think, is that with the watershed underground, so the feed of the river is coming underneath the ground, the temperature of the creek is more consistent, right? It doesn't it doesn't fluctuate wildly.
Absolutely. In fact, that's why the Nelsons. I used to work. I worked a little bit on their ranch one summer. I mean, this is a long time ago. Like. Summer of 1986, and I was just doing some odd jobs. I was actually working for somebody who ended up, we put in a septic line, and I think I helped a couple times. They actually had an operation too where they raised fish and then, you know, sold them to restaurants. And but anyway, I remember when I was when I was working there that even talking to them, their family originally bought that ranch. They were attracted to the Spring Creeks, not because of fishing. They didn't care about that or really know that much about it at the time. It was just because, in the winter, like you said, with that consistent temperature, the creek wouldn't freeze, and so the cattle could get down and drink water out of it. So, yeah, that's absolutely right. That affects fishing, doesn't it?
It does, and I think I don't know how to say this, and this is definitely not coming from a scientific point of view, but I do think the fish tend to feed less dramatically. So they feed more consistently because there's food 24/7.
Right, yeah, and it's the same patterns, the same kinds of, the hatches may change from season to season, but, within a season, one day is maybe kind of like the next, and you just have these waves of hatches, and you wait for them. And yeah, I want to come back to that idea, but something else I should stop and just say for listeners outside of the Midwest is to know what we mean by the driftless. The driftless is that area in southwest Wisconsin, southeast Minnesota, northeast Iowa, right?
Yeah, we've never fished there, but we should.
No, I know it. But that area, the glaciers did not drift through, hence the name Driftless. They didn't drift through and knock down the little hills and the valleys or dells that contain all those spring creeks. And so, that's what we're talking about. When we talk about fishing the Driftless, everything that we fish there pretty much is a spring creek.
Yeah.
So, okay, but back to your point that fish tend to feed less dramatically or aggressively. What does that mean for fly fishing?
Again, I'm no scientist, but they do, from my experience, they do tend to feed in waves.
Yeah, I think so.
And so we've had days in the Driftless where a BWO hatch will start and stop and start and stop. And it's crazy how almost timed it is, right? So five minutes you can't keep a fish off your line, and then for 5 minutes you can't get a strike to save your life. And I suppose that's somewhat the same in other areas, maybe in the Freestone. But it seems with the Driftless that it seems like it is in waves.
Yeah, and I remember that the times I fish in Nelson Spring Creek when I lived in Montana, that we'd go and you'd wait for hatch to start, and it might seem like it was, once it started, it was a little bit more prolonged than what we've had the driftless, and then, you know, it might be 15, 20 minutes, and then it's done for an hour, and then, or a half hour, and then it, another 30 minutes of, so yeah, I tend to think wherever you're at in a spring creek, that's going to be the pattern. There's the timing may be, it'll be localized and probably depending too in the time of year. But I think that's a really good observation.
So here's a key point. And if you're a fly fisher and sometimes you're confused about, you read about all these risers and you go to a stream and you don't see anything rising, you don't even see any bugs, right? Yes, you can pick up rocks and look underneath the rocks and see, the mayfly nymphs that are underneath there. And if they're out in the west, you can see the golden fly nymphs. And so, but let's just say it, Steve, how many times do you think through the years of, we've fished the driftless hundreds and hundreds of days. How many times were we stepped out of the truck, walked up to the stream, and always, and they were rising, like where the water was almost boiling?
Yeah.
I don't think ever.
No, very, very, very few. You know, we have a couple places on the driftless where a couple runs that just always seem to be good. But even when we go to those, doesn't seem like there's that many times where, the water's boiling, they're just rising. It's like we get there, we kind of wait, we see, oh, hey, here's some fish rising.
And
yeah. And then they start, and maybe, remember, we've had some times that one, run on a little stream that we won't mention, but we have a favorite hole or a favorite run, and yeah, we've gotten there sometimes, and man, all of a sudden, it just, they're going crazy, and 5 minutes, though, and it just shuts down.
Yeah.
And it's like you just have to wait.
In fact, on that creek, boy, that's the other thing with spring creeks. You and I have identified a couple runs on a creek that is about a mile and a half. And we have fished it so many times. We know exactly where they're gonna hit. And no matter how much we go into these other places, we don't catch fish. We go to those two runs, one run you're talking about, and then the one up around the bend.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And we tend to always catch fish. But the point here simply is, I think a lot of fly fishers, when they fish spring creek, get their butts kicked. And if you've grown up in the West, you've been fishing trout that, to have these major hatches, and it can be confusing. Or you think that you're a bad fly fisher. So I was just out the other day. I was out a couple days ago in the driftless. I was up in Madison for a meeting, and then I thought, hi, I'm going to spend the night and then just get up early.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Did I invite you?
No, I couldn't have made it. You knew that. I'll give you credit
but
for
I
that.
Did, I did text Steve right before I started to fish, and I said, hey, Steve, because there's no – where we fish in this stream, there's no cell coverage for me anyway.
Right.
I'm on AT&T and occasionally I can get some, but generally not. So I said, Steve, if I don't text you by noon, call 911 that I've not made it out. Not that it's a crazy creek to fish. But anyway, so I went out there. I was out there about 7:45 in the morning. There was not a bug in the air. Not a
and that's a place too where you've sometimes you run into rising fish.
Absolutely.
At 7:30, 8 o'clock there. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so nothing was rising, and there was nothing. No, there was no bugs until about 10 a.m. I started to see these tiny mayflies. So I was thinking, isn't this time of year for caddis? But there was no caddis. So I started out with dry flies, with an attractor. I used a size 18 purple haze, trying to get them up off the bottom, and I didn't catch anything. So I went to a nymph rig, and I ended up catching, I think, three in about 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. I probably hooked up another three, but it was just hard fishing, and I was just reminded again about the challenges of fishing the driftless or spring creeks. They're just challenging.
And that's an implication I think we can draw out. And I hear a lot of fly fishers, veteran fly fishers, making this point that you can never go wrong with nymphing. And that's hard for a guy like me who likes to catch them on dries. But We've talked about this before. Even when fish are rising, or it appears they're rising, it doesn't mean they're always feeding on stuff right on the surface. It could be in the film, could be, you know, could be that six-inch window right below the surface where, you know, they're catching the emergers as they come up. So, yeah, it's and even during a hatch, you know, it's of course I won't practice what I'm going to preach here because I want to catch them on the surface. But even when they're feeding on the surface, you can always catch them, you know, underneath in the film or kind of just below that. So yeah, you mentioned the purple haze. I mean, thinking about patterns, that's a great all around imitation for, you know, even BWOs, you know, betas, you know, just a good mayfly pattern. So what's another insight, Dave, for fly fishing spring creeks that would be helpful to keep in mind?
Well, we learned this from, who is the River Runs Through It guide?
Oh, yeah, Norman McLean.
The guy who's a consultant.
Gary Borger.
Remembered that. Gary Borger. So
I was going to say, what? I don't remember Norman McLean.
So he was one of the
McLean.
First interviews that we did. It may have been the first or second podcast
did. Yep.
Yeah. It wasn't the first one, but maybe the second or third. But he talked about this, and you just need lighter tackle when you fish spring creeks.
Yeah, just more delicate, isn't it? Yeah.
Now, I know if you Google spring creeks, and you'll see pictures with 25 and 30-inch brown trout, and there is no doubt that there are big brown trout in these streams. I just have never caught the big ones. I've caught those bigger ones out in the west, but I've just never caught them. And my biggest fish in the Driftless has probably been 18 inches.
Wow. It's bigger than mine. I think 16, 17 for me has been the limit, which is a big fish, but yeah.
It is. So you're not catching, you know, regularly we're catching 10-inch to 14-inch fish. A 14-inch brown is a big fish in the Driftless.
And in Nelson Spring Creek, just to move it westward, you know, it's those fish, ones I were catching were about the same size as you'd get out of the Yellowstone River. You know, the bigger ones are 15 to 19 inches.
So it flows in there. So do those browns move up into the Nelson Spring Creek? I'm sure they do, right?
You know, I think so. I've never really fished there. Never fished it much in the fall. I was too busy hunting. But I think so. I shouldn't say definitively since I don't know, but.
Well, back to this point, I think you need lighter tackle. And one of the things that you and I have done, you use an 8.5 four-weight rod.
Mm-hmm.
And is it a Winston? Is that a Winston rod?
No, that's an Orvis. It's now a Recon. It's in about its second iteration because I broke it once and then I lost/broke it a second time. And so the first time they replaced, I think they gave me a new rod, but it was whatever I had before. I think it was like a TLS. Now it's a Recon. But I love that rod. Yeah, my 9 foot 6 weight is a Winston, Boron 2X. But yeah, my 8.5 four weights an Orvis. And the Recon is sort of the middle of the line. I love it. It's just it performs great.
Yeah, I love that rod. You've let me fish with it and I really like that rod. I picked up a 7.5 3-weight Sage. It's called the Sage Dart.
Yeah, that's
and I
that's
just
a sweet
love
rod.
It for spring creeks. It's just so fabulous. When you hook onto a 14-inch or even a 15-inch, that thing bends and loops, and it's amazing little rod. Now you can't cast as far, but I still use it with streamers. You'd think that small of a rod might be more difficult to fish with streamers. Now you can't use a huge articulated, you know, size 2 or size 4 articulated streamers, but you can, you know, 6, 8, 10 streamer, and it casts it really well. So so lighter tackle meaning lighter rods, right? So that's one thing.
Yeah, and then smaller flies, so, you know, with dry flies and even nymphs, sometimes you have to go down to I think a size 18 is small, but on a spring creek, you may have to go to a 20 or even a
22.
Even a 22. I tell you what, I pretty much draw the line at size 20.
Yeah,
that's small enough. And I've caught a lot of fish on size 20, but I think there's only been a time or two when I think it was a size 22, Dave. It was so small I couldn't even see it, if you know what I mean. Now, that also means something else, right, as far as your leader or tippet size?
Right, so you're at least 5X, and really, you should be 6X. Some people use 7X. I mean, if you're tying on a size 22, you're probably using 7X.
So the higher the number on those, it means the smaller diameter, the tippet. So it's like, what is a 5X or a 6X? Isn't it like 3.75 pound?
Something like that.
Test.
Yeah.
So it's lighter, but it's otherwise, if you use something larger, it's going to look like a rope on the end of it, and the fish will spot it.
Especially if you're using a size 20 trying to thread that thing, forget it.
Yep.
So smaller, I would say the minimum size.
Yep.
Or maybe the best way is the maximum size is 18. Yeah. Then you need to go down. Size 20, size 22.
That's good. Hey, that reminds me of something else, too. When we talk about using these lighter rods, spring creeks are typically smaller than those larger freestone rivers. So you usually don't need to make long casts.
No.
And I heard a fly fishing guide say to keep your cast short so you can see and control your fly. And I think that makes sense. But that raises another problem, and that is you can't get too close or you're going to spook the trout in these crystal clear streams. Isn't that right?
It's one of the great conundrums of fishing spring creeks. Like some of the ones that we fish in the Driftless, they have nice banks and you can like walk right up to the run on some of them, right? Now, there's other places in the Driftless where the creek is going through brush.
Yeah.
And you have to stay in the creek to actually fish it, which of course you're using the bow and arrow cast and it's really difficult to fish those.
You may use the bow and arrow cast. I've maybe used it successfully twice and I've tried it 15 times.
Well, it's so hard. So, you know, these
I just worry about hooking my so the idea on the bow and arrow cast, my finger, because you're pulling, you're kind of holding what the bend of the hook and praying that you don't get stuck by it, and you're pulling it back, like a slingshot, and then you get that bend in your rod and there's tension, and then you let it go and it flies. That's what I'm worried. It's always going to catch my finger. So anyway, you use the bow and arrow cast. Sorry.
So I fished with a guy about a year ago. He and I fished the Driftless, and I watched him, and I thought, this was such a good tutorial on how to fish spring creeks. Like, there's this creek in southern Minnesota that we went to. Again, it has these banks, and these banks are kind of above the stream. And the problem with that, of course, is that the moment you walk up on those banks, they see you.
Right.
Forget it.
Even if you're on your knees in some places.
Even if you're on your knees. So I saw him, how he came up from the bottom of the run and just moved inch by inch right along the side. He was in the stream, and he just caught more fish than I did. And it's 100% that the fish didn't see him. And he was able to even catch like two fish out of the same run, which is something you often can't do in the spring creek because the runs are so small. So the point here is that if you're one of those fly fishers, and for you, it's all about casting, and all you want to do is walk up to the run and start casting, you'll struggle in small creeks. It's because they see you. That's the only thing. And you have to figure out a way, since they're facing upstream, you have to come from the bottom so they're facing upstream. You're coming from underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're going to cast downstream, you just have to be far enough from the run, keep your profile low, crawl up to the run, go up on your knees.
Yep. You know, Dave, that stream that we love to fish that's west of Madison a ways, you remember there's that one run on it that is so good, but we never caught much until we started doing that.
Yeah.
Now, if we stay at the bottom of it, because there really is, there's a high bank, and, every time I'd come up to that thing, I know I spooked fish, but now when we stand at the bottom of that, I mean, it can be... They can just be dynamite.
In fact, that is where I caught one of the fish 2 days ago.
Okay.
I was fishing up there.
All right.
Fishing
there,
so.
Hey, I should say that this is kind of funny. When I fish Nelson Spring Creek, and this has been back in the early 2000s, I noticed where I was fishing was that the fish weren't spooky. It was interesting. I could almost walk up on them, and I know they could see me because it's just crystal clear. But they were super selective. And I could almost be standing on top of them. I'm sure they could see me. And, you know, until there was a hatch that was happening or until I got a pattern that was small enough, which I think is a real key. Sometimes size is more important than even the pattern. But you know, until I had the right fly on, you know, they didn't. You know, I never spooked them, but they just totally ignored it. So I suppose it's different everywhere. Well, maybe too, I was fishing riffles. I always do better in riffles than slow water.
Yeah.
I do remember, you know, a couple times on Nelson Spring Creek, I spotted fish that were feeding in that, kind of in that slower, smoother, glassy water. And, I mean, I had a number of fish that I spooked, but I actually did catch a couple, you know, like 18, 19 inch rainbows. And I remember they were on size 20 blue wing olives, but I just did a lot better on the riffles, you know. Yeah. On Nelson Spring Creek, I don't know anymore if they allow like 3 or 4 rods a day. And it's not a very long stretch, but typically guys go to favorite spots. And when I would get there, man, I would run to the riffles because riffles are very forgiving. Obviously, they break up the surface a little bit. So, you know, what the trout sees is distorted.
Well, I will also say in the riffles, there are long stretches of slow water.
Yeah.
And I just walk right by.
Yeah, I ignore those.
I never cast. It's a waste of time.
No, and once in a while we've tried it because, okay, there's 2 or 3 fish rising and they just seem to ignore
it. And I think it's because the cast isn't delicate enough. The other day I was watching like a fly fishing show and they had this 5-year-old kid that was double hauling. He must have been double hauling 50 feet. That kid was amazing. Wow. I thought, I could do that. You know, yeah. But then I was thinking about these delicate casts that you have to make. No. That's a different kind of fly
fishing.
Yeah, there's
no double hauling on these
spring
creeks. There's no
double hauling on these creeks.
For the most part. So, Dave, there's something else you've talked about before, another insight. You said to be successful, you need to be continually mixing it up. Well, what's that mean on a spring creek?
So I will just say what happened the other day. I got there. I wanted to fish dry flies. I'm thinking it's early May. There's got to be something moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see any bugs, but I was, you know, on the surface. But I thought, I'm going to do this. So I started fishing dries, and I fished for about 45 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. Not 45. 30 minutes, nothing. So I thought, okay, I'm moving to a nymph. So I moved to a nymph rig, 2 nymphs. I had on the top one was a caddis emerger. But it had a bead head on it. So, and then I dropped a zebra midge about maybe 8 to 10 inches off of that.
Yeah.
And within literally probably my 5th or 6th cast, I caught my first fish. So the point here is, if you're not catching something, you have to switch. And whether you're switching from dries to nymphs to streamers, or maybe you're switching flies, you have to keep mixing it up. So with spring creeks, I have found that given the fact that it's very rare to have a hatch going on or there's a lot of action on the surface, you have to try to figure it out. Even at the end of the day, the other day, they stopped hitting my nymph. And so I thought, I'm gonna go to a streamer. So I went to a white streamer and I had one flash at it, and I had one strike, but that was it. I didn't catch any on the streamer. The point here is simply, if you're going to fish spring creeks and you've fished for 2 or 3 hours with the same thing and you haven't caught anything, that's on you, right? You've got to mix it up. I would say 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and you need to be moving from run to run. If you're not catching anything, change it up, mix it up.
So here's another suggestion, Dave. This is a little bit more lighthearted, but I do think there's something to it. Unless it's cold outside, there's no need for wearing your chest waders, your full waders in most of these spring creeks. I mean, remember, we saw a guy in full waders in the Driftless a few years ago, and the temperature was like close to 80 degrees. And I mean, we know that stream, and the only places that you're going to wade, it's not even probably going to get higher than your boots, your wading boots.
Yeah, your ankles.
But this
yeah.
guy was all decked out in full waders, and I thought, I'd die. I'd sweat and have a stroke or something in that. So our approach has been...
less is more.
Yeah, less is more. So we wear nylon pants, and then we'll use the wading socks and boots, and I don't even, you know, I think the way those wading socks are made, like you would put them down over your boots, like, no, I don't. I just hike them up. I probably look like some hiker in Europe kind of wearing the knickers or something. Yeah, I'm sure it looks stupid. But, you know, here, what, were we out like 3 weeks ago in Minnesota? And there was a young guy that I stopped and talked to him, and then he kind of looked. He says,
he's a college student.
Yeah, and he was a good fly fisher. He knew what he was doing. But he had, you know, he had his chest waders on, nice Sims waders, and he looked and he said, you know, he says, maybe I ought to do that. And he says, yeah, this can get pretty hot. I said, yeah, absolutely. Now, here's one caveat. Waders can maybe help keep ticks out. And man, on our last trip, I found two of them. So the one morning, the last morning that we fished, remember I looked and here's this tick on my stomach.
Like, oh my.
Great. And thankfully it hadn't burrowed in. Then when I got home, and this is even worse because my wife Priscilla always says, you better take a shower, you better check for ticks. And she didn't this time, but I think it was the next morning I got up and here's another tick.
Where was it?
Yeah, it was on my stomach again.
Another one?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I know. And then, you know what? I don't know if I've told her this. I think I'll have to tell her this too. I found a dead tick on a towel. So,
it's like, no, don't tell her.
Man.
There's
yeah,
no reason to upset
that's
her.
That's right. Yes.
So that's interesting because I didn't have a single tick on me.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy. And I usually don't. But, well, and who knows? I think waders might help with that. But those things can, I don't know, unless you're covering every part of your body, like your head and your shoulders. But, you know, waders definitely can help with that a little bit.
Sure.
But tell you what, if it's 70s, even 60s and sunny, I am not wearing waders.
So I wore waders the other day because when I got out there, it was 41.
Yeah, that's...
But by the time I got off the river, it was about 50, and
yep.
It was way too hot.
And that's why we like wearing them even in the Driftless when it's, you know, fishing
cold.
And it's cold because it's more insulation. That works great. Hey, maybe one more. I guess what we've been saying today is that spring creeks require lighter tackle, stealth, and patience. But I think, Dave, there's one final insight that we need to mention when it comes to fly fishing spring creeks.
So you're better at this than I am, right? And it's because you move on from run to run. And maybe there's two parts to this. One is, you know, after you cast 3, 4, 5 times, you just need to move on because you've really, by the time that fourth or fifth cast has gone onto that run, you've probably scared the fish, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the corollary to that is after you catch a single fish out of these smaller runs, you just need to move on. And I tend to do this. Like I'll catch a fish, like I did this the other day. I caught my first fish out of this run. What did I do? I cast right back in at about, you know, another 10 times. Did I catch anything? No, because I had scared. I mean, these runs are not huge.
Yeah.
So anytime you are playing a fish, and obviously you're not trying to play it, you're just trying to get it in. But even in the playing of the fish to net it, that's disturbing the water. So just move on.
Yeah.
This has to do with efficiency when you're, and I, maybe that's the word here. It's one of
yeah.
the words is you have to be more efficient when you're fishing spring creeks.
Yeah, that's good. Now, I'm laughing, Dave, because I forgot about that. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was thinking about a final insight, and when you said, Steve, you're better at this than I am, I thought, what are you saying, Dave? So what's our final insight?
Sometimes the best fishing with spring creeks isn't fishing, it's eating.
Yes.
Isn't that the point?
Yes, and you're saying I'm better at that than you are. Yes, okay, yes. Yeah.
How many times have we just said, you know what? We're stumped. Let's go eat.
Yeah, that's right. That's saved many a good day on many a bad day on a spring creek. So, well, hopefully there's something in this that you can find useful. I hope that you get an opportunity to fish spring creeks. Hey, that's going to do it for today. Thanks again for listening. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Goetz.
Until next time, we are two guys in a river.
For the love of fly fishing.